And joining us on Perspectives today are Philip and Carol Zaleski. They are the co-authors of Prayer, A History, editors of The Book of Heaven. Philip Zaleski is also the author of The Recollected Heart and co-author of Gifts of the Spirit. And he's also the editor of the Best Spiritual Writing and Best American Spiritual Writing series. And Carol's a professor of world religions at Smith College, and she is the author of Other World Journeys and The Life of the World to Come. And we are going to talk about the latest book. It's called The Fellowship, The Literary Lives of the Inklings. And people might say, well, who were the Inklings? Were they a 50s rock group or a doo-wop? But you get into this book and tell us a little bit more about them. But again, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, our pleasure to be here.
So what I read here, the introduction, is both of you are writers and you've had several publications out there. But tell us a little bit about this book, The Fellowship, because as I mentioned before the interview started, it's a very big book. And at first it might look like it's an academic book, but it reads very well. The narrative is easy to follow, easy to read, so you don't have to have a PhD to read one of these. And tell us about this.
Well, thanks very much. Well, the book is about a group called the Inklings, which is a group of 20th century writers, at least two of whom are extremely famous. One is J.R.R. Tolkien, author of Lord of the Rings, and the other is C.S. Lewis, author of the Narnia books and many other books, very popular Christian writer. And Lewis and Tolkien, along with many of their friends, used to meet once a week for 20 or 30 years in at Lewis's rooms at Oxford University and also at a pub in Oxford. They met every week to read their unpublished writings to each other and to get criticism from each other and just to share good conversation and fellowship, which is really where the title comes from.
So as far as what we're talking here and what you found out in your research is that basically the Inklings, and I'll mention the names, as you said, J.R.R. Tolkien, C.S. Lewis, and the other two are Owen Barfield and Charles Williams. And so what they did, I guess, is like students do now in groups, and they brainstorm and try and find out, pick each other's brains and get ideas?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that the world would never have seen The Lord of the Rings if it were not for these Inklings meetings and the encouragement that Tolkien received to get this work finally to gel. So that's a significant contribution if you're a Tolkien fan, and I think similar things can be said about other works that they produce.
And Carol, what about the other two that I mentioned, Mr. Barfield and Mr. Williams? As you mentioned, the other two are still known, you know, and their books came to life when they appeared on the screen, and so a lot of people were waiting to see these. It became almost like pop culture as far as Lord of the Rings and Hobbits and also The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and everybody was familiar with those. What happened to these other two men?
Yeah, I mean, it's true. Lewis and Tolkien are big cultural celebrities, to the chagrin of some of their critics who had prophesied that their works would mercifully go into oblivion, but they didn't. But Owen Barfield and Charles Williams are two other figures among a larger group who participated in Inklings meetings, two other figures who did write significant works that don't have the popular appeal, perhaps, that Lewis and Tolkien have, but who are equally interesting in a number of ways and who are part of the phenomenon that gave rise to works like The Lord of the Rings and Lewis's fantastic writings as well.
We're visiting with Philip and Carol Zaleski, and they are the authors of the book The Fellowship, The Literary Lives of the Inklings. And as Carol and Philip have mentioned, J.R. Tolkien, C.S. Lewis, Owen Barfield, and Charles Williams. As I'm reading some of the things here in the book and the other men that I just asked you about, the titles for some of these books that the other two wrote sound very interesting, but I'm wondering, you know, why did these other two rise to success and keep on going while Mr. Williams did? Mr. Williams, I'm reading some of his books, titles like The Ceremony of Consecration, Threshold of Sacred Mystery, The Place of the Lion, and The Greater Trumps. What happened?
Yeah. Well, some of Williams' books, the last two you mentioned, are actually novels and pretty thrilling novels, sort of supernatural thrillers. And those books are still in print, and he still has a pretty good following. Barfield, the other of the four that we discuss in depth in the book, Owen Barfield, he was not a novelist. So he wrote philosophical works, mostly about language and consciousness and the nature of consciousness, rather abstruse works, which obviously wouldn't have as wide a following, but they're also quite entertaining books. And, you know, the Inklings as a whole, there were 20 members over the years, at least. It's hard to count because people come and go. So there were many writers who came and went, and some of the others had at least one or two successful books, and there were also some who were just soldiers, or there was a film director. It was quite a combination, and makes for a very colorful story.
As you mentioned, the gathering of the Inklings, it's I read in the research that I was doing also for this book that Williams, and I'm talking about Charles Williams, one of the Inklings, when he would go to the pub and when he went to Oxford, he was a fixture there apparently, and many people went to hear him lecture on Milton, Shakespeare, romantic love, and other things like that.
Yeah, one of the interesting things about his lectures is, well, first of all, he didn't really have academic credentials. It would be harder to pull this off nowadays. But people liked to go to lectures. It was a great form of entertainment and intellectually invigorating. One of the lectures that was a huge sensation among Oxford students was a lecture he gave on chastity in Milton, in which he was defending chastity as a kind of adventure that one could have. So to the undergraduates, this was a very novel idea, and they were very intrigued.
And when we hear, as you mentioned, it would be very hard for him to pull this off today. There's always been a controversy, but now it seems like it's getting bigger, and that's about either the freedom of religion or religion versus religion. And there's, as you mentioned in your book, that the Inklings had heated arguments about Catholicism versus Anglicanism.
Well, that's right. Every member of the Inklings was a Christian, a practicing Christian, but that comes in many different stripes, as you know. And, well, Tolkien was Catholic, Lewis was an Anglican, Charles Williams was Anglican too, but also interested actually in magic. And Barfield was a follower of an esoteric German Christian teacher. So that they had different views on many things, and since they loved to argue, and these meetings they had once a week often were just very exciting and funny arguments they would have with each other. Well, religion, of course, became one of the great topics that they disputed about.
It's kind of a model, though, too, because they could argue ferociously and remain friends, and I think that's something in our culture we tend to miss. That possibility that you can really have a strong commitment to a worldview that isn't shared by your neighbors and friends, and you can talk about it not only civilly, but you could really enjoy the diversity of opinions. It wasn't always the case. There were tensions among them, too, but on the whole, that's why we call the book The Fellowship. There was a spirit of fellowship within which they could not only share common aspirations, but also diverge.
I'm glad that you mentioned that as far as being able to argue and then still be friends afterwards, you know, what we term friendly arguments. And with social media the way it is today, anybody, in fact, I remember even way back when I was in undergraduate school, that one of the professors said, if you want to, you know, hit a sore point or a spark, talk about politics or religion, and that's going to spark anything. And we see that in social media, and especially about religion. It's not either, you know, gray, black, or white. It's just, if you disagree with them, all of a sudden you start lashing out at people, whether you're pro or con, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, that's the problem, the lashing out. And the Inklings knew how to argue with each other without lashing out, with a few exceptions. I mean, it happened occasionally, of course. But by and large, these were friendly and civil discussions, which, as Carol says, are a good model for all of us to follow, and very different from the sort of horrible thing you see in internet discussions.
We're visiting with Philip and Carol Zaleski, and they are the authors of The Fellowship, The Literary Lives of the Inklings. Tell us, first of all, I was fascinated when I read about one of the reviews said that it was Tolkien's experience in World War I that led him to create Middle-earth.
Yeah, I think it's really true that these are a generation of writers who could be compared to the great war poets, people like Wilfred Owen, Siegfried Sassoon. Their young minds were formed by the experience, the really devastating experience of the First World War. Lewis and Tolkien both were at the front. Tolkien said he lost all but one of his close friends. By 1918, all but one of his close friends were dead. Nearly 20% of the Oxford students who served in the war died. So they experienced this catastrophic loss. And I think that made them cherish their fellowship all the more, but also gave them a sense that, and this is a sense that they had as Christians, that we're in a fallen world, that there are hostile forces, and that the world is under siege by hostile forces, but that there's hope. So unlike some war writers who really despaired when they saw a whole generation mowed down, they saw the terrors of our century, but they had hope.
I'm wondering, because these books have been around for a long time, Lord of the Rings and also the Chronicles of Narnia. Those are the two that stand out as far as probably in the secular world, because C.S. Lewis wrote a lot of other books that probably attract more Christians than non-Christian, such as the Screwtape Letters, Mere Christianity, and I could go on and on. But since you all were writing about this, and how did this interest develop in C.S. Lewis and Tolkien as children? Did you read these books? Were you fans of these men?
Well, I'm speaking for myself, but I think this was also Carol's experience. We didn't read these writers when we were kids, although the books had been published when we were kids. But we read them just a little later, say in our late teens, early 20s. I certainly discovered Lord of the Rings and devoured it, and also Narnia books and several of Lewis's other novels. And we fell in love with them, you know, and we kept returning to these stories, and then we found out these men were friends, and inevitably we got interested in what their friendship was like, which led us to the discovery of the whole group of Inklings, and paved the way for writing a book about them.
Yeah, there's things that they have in common that people that are fans of one of the Inklings tend to go towards the others as well. So there are many scholars of the Inklings out there and many fans who have this experience that Lewis said was kind of the essence of friendship, which is that sense of discovery that someone else shares your interests, and that you know you may have thought you were the only one that had a certain kind of outlook on the world. And so many readers and fans of the Inklings have that experience in reading their books, as if they've found friends, as if there's a kind of a wonderful, benign conspiracy. And so you read one of the Inklings, and then you go to another one and another one, and even though they're not all just like each other, you feel like they're onto something, which is a shared value and outlook, which is not always present in our world at large.
As people read this book, and as I mentioned, it's a big book, but it does cover a lot of material and has some great pictures as well, and we'll talk about those in just a minute. But people have read some of C.S. Lewis's other books, perhaps understand or think or believe, and perhaps you can tell us a little bit more about this, the fact that he was an atheist, and then when he converted to Christianity, he was very much the apologist in the group, I guess, and that's why a lot of his books continue to go in that direction. However, they're hard to read, as for the average reader, I guess, says, because C.S. Lewis' book, there's a lot of meat in there.
Yeah, well, it depends on the book, of course. Some of his books, like Mere Christianity, grew out of radio talks that he gave during World War II to the embattled British nation. And those talks, I think anyone can read, and Mere Christianity, anyone can read and enjoy it and learn from it. He was also quite the scholar, so some of his other books are more difficult and dense to get through. But I think in Lewis's case, his apologetic writings are as important in a way in his fiction as his fiction. They certainly sell very well. I think he's been described as the best-selling Christian writer of the 20th century, which is pretty extraordinary considering how many there have been. So it's a key part of his work. Of course, Tolkien said that Lord of the Rings is a Catholic work and is drenched with Christianity as well, but he kept it in the background. There's nothing explicitly Christian about it, but the themes, you know, of hope, of overcoming evil, on and on, these themes are very Christian, and so it was an important motive for him as well.
I sometimes think that Lewis's best apologetics are to be found in works like his Space Trilogy, which I actually prefer to the Narnian Chronicles.
I was just going to ask about that. You read my mind. Let's talk about that science fiction trilogy, because a lot of people are not aware of that. And then when they read it, they go, wow, that is a great set of books.
Yeah. Out of the Silent Planet is actually very influenced by a novel. That's the first of the Space Trilogy. It's influenced by a novel that H.G. Wells wrote. And it was sparked by Lewis getting wind of people talking about what to do when the resources of this planet are depleted, how we might go and colonize other worlds. And Lewis was actually concerned people were taking this seriously because he thought if there were other worlds to colonize, we'd bring all our problems to those other worlds and probably wreck them too. So there is a kind of anti-imperialist aspect to it, which he also shared with H.G. Wells, but he ends up using the Space Trilogy to transpose classical Christian cosmology and medieval thought, he was a medievalist, to a science fiction framework, which he does very effectively. It's quite fun, and the hero of the stories is a figure who seems to be based on Tolkien, so it's a nice tribute to Tolkien as well.
So
I could go on and on about it, but I won't.
Okay.
I love those books.
So Dr. Ransom is based on Tolkien?
I think so, yeah. I have a number of reasons why I think so. He's a philologist, that is, a student and lover of languages, which was Tolkien's main passion. In fact, Tolkien said he wrote the Lord of the Rings and other works like that so that he could invent languages and have stories to flesh them out. But he also is a scholar of actual historic languages. And his name, Ransom, is, I think, connected, which means redeem, is connected to the fact that the patron of Catholic Oxford is Our Lady of Ransom, and Tolkien was a devout Catholic, something that he had disagreed with Lewis about. So there are a number of reasons why I think that's a tribute to Tolkien.
We're visiting with Philip and Carol Zaleski, and they are the authors of the book The Fellowship, The Literary Lives of the Inklings. We have talked about the other two gentlemen, Charles Williams and Noam Barfield, but mostly about Williams. We haven't touched on Barfield that much. And I was wondering, Philip or Carol, what happened to that children's book that he wrote? I think it was called The Silver Trumpet. That did not take off as everybody thought it would?
Well, it was published in the late 1920s, if I have my chronology right, and I think it did all right for a little while, but it went out of print. It certainly didn't have the success that Tolkien's Hobbit did or that Lewis's children's books did. It's back in print now, and people are reading it because of its author's association with the Inklings. But Barfield, after that, tried writing in a novel for adults, and that he couldn't even get published. At that point, he realized he didn't have a calling as a novelist, and he became a lawyer. And he was a practicing lawyer in London for most of his life. But while doing that, he was writing these philosophical works about the nature of language and the nature of mind and so on, and the evolution of human consciousness. Very interesting studies. Which again didn't do very well at the time, but are getting to be widely read nowadays because Barfield is now getting quite famous as one of the Inklings. So in a sense, it was the success of his friends Tolkien and Lewis that led eventually to his own success.
And see, I always thought that perhaps Barfield, I wasn't aware that he was an attorney because I always figured that he was a linguist or an English professor because of poetic diction and his love of English folk dance.
Well, Poetic Diction is an extraordinary book because What he wanted to do was study the way language and words change over time. So what he actually did is he picked up the Oxford English Dictionary, which I believe in its original form is about 18 or 24 volumes. Now you can look at it on the Internet. And he started reading it, and he read the entries for thousands and thousands and thousands of words that give their derivation and give examples of how they're used over history. And by using the dictionary, he was able to trace how words and the English language itself changes over time. And then he made the extraordinary argument that this actually reflects the way our very consciousness of the world has changed over the centuries. And this is the sort of the heart of all of his books, the idea of the evolution of consciousness.
The other thing Barfield contributed, which was a big influence on C.S. Lewis, was Lewis says that Barfield cured him of his chronological snobbery, that is, his idea that there are certain things that modern people simply can't believe because they're ancient or classical or medieval ideas, rather than evaluating truth claims on their own merits, that it's a matter of what's current. So Barfield cured Lewis of that, and this is another shared characteristic of all the Inklings, that they were allergic to modernism, to a kind of dogmatic modernism. They liked archaic and medieval things, not because they were regressive, but because they thought the modern world needs to be cut off from its roots, which really are what feed and nurture our imagination, our moral life.
So is that why when we see some of these movies, like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and the other Chronicles of Narnia, and Lord of the Rings, you see a lot of like medieval hints there?
Yeah, I missed something they share with the whole Romantic movement, British Romanticism, influenced by Continental Romanticism. This love of medieval things, like the Pre-Raphaelite painters, looking for a kind of re-enchantment of the modern world by drawing upon medieval legends and medieval forms of art, Gothic architecture.
I think they had a very strong sense that the modern world was in serious trouble. Part of this was environmental concerns, interestingly enough, that we're mentioning this on the day the Pope's new encyclical on the environment comes out, an encyclical that Tolkien and Lewis would both have applauded strongly. Tolkien in particular rails in his essays and in his private letters about technology and machines and the danger of losing touch with the natural world. He would rush out of his house if he saw a neighbor cutting down a tree and would sort of throw himself around the tree and put himself between the tree and the saw that was going to chop, or the axe that was going to chop it down. Lewis felt strongly about these things too. So the environment, and of course, as Carol said, they had all experienced the war. So they were horrified at the violence of the modern world as well. And I think they thought that in turning to other cultures and previous eras, we could learn things about how to live in harmony with other people and the environment that you wouldn't adopt them wholesale, these teachings from the past, but you would adapt them to the modern world, take what was good in these teachings, and help to heal our world through that.
Yeah, and I think that's what fantasy helps one to do, to imagine different scenarios and to, as Lewis says, to have an enlargement of our being, to take us out of ourselves so that we can see what the world might look like through other eyes.
We're visiting with Philip and Carol Zaleski. They are the authors of The Fellowship, The Literary Lives of the Inklings. And the Inklings are J.R. Tolkien, C.S. Lewis, Owen Barfield, and Charles Williams. What about the research that you did? Was it very difficult to find information on these men? I would imagine the Tolkien and Lewis, probably not. But what about the others? And then here comes another, it's probably more of a comment than a question. One of the pictures in the book has the picture of the eagle and a child, and that is apparently the pub that these Inklings used to meet at?
Right. Well, of course, a lot of our research consisted of going to the eagle and the child and then sitting down in it and talking about the Inklings. That was a good start. Yeah, we did a lot of library research. We had to go to the Bodleian Library, Oxford University's library of books and archival material, and we read all of Barfield's unpublished letters, and we read material by Williams and Tolkien that hadn't been published. In addition, as you say, there's a massive amount that's been written about the two famous figures, but much less about the others. So there was a lot of legwork involved.
Yeah, we were also helped by a library in the States, at the Marion E. Wade Center at Wheaton College in Wheaton, Illinois. They have a research library that's dedicated to these four figures and to three other figures. And they've got a wonderful collection both of printed books, published books, and manuscripts and images. They were terrific.
One of the things that you mentioned as far as these Inklings go is we were talking about the success that Tolkien and Lewis had. But Barfield, I guess his success came late in life. Am I right?
His success came very late in life. I think he felt that he was a failure for most of his life because he was trapped in a law firm doing work he didn't particularly enjoy. He was Lewis's lawyer and helped. Lewis gave away almost all the money he made, and Barfield did this for him secretly, without other people knowing about it. Barfield enjoyed tasks like that, but basically he didn't like being a lawyer. And it wasn't until after the death of both Lewis and Tolkien that Barfield he came to the United States, and he started out by giving lecture tours about C.S. Lewis and about his friendship with C.S. Lewis. And this led people to say, well, this fellow's a good lecturer. Let's see if he's done anything else. And then they discovered Barfield's own books. And Barfield was still turning out books at this point. And that's when his success came. So his success was actually after most of the Inklings had passed away, most of the other Inklings. He lived a long life. I think he was in his late 90s when he died.
Visiting with Philip and Carol Zaleski, authors of The Fellowship. I want to take a sentence out of a review from the LA Times that Elizabeth Han wrote, and the last sentence reads, "One is left with the impression that within each of those hearty, laughing, church-going writers, there beat a pagan heart." What do you get out of that?
Well, they loved pagan mythology, but it's not like they were closet pagans. If that suggests that, I hope that's not what she meant to say. But just like, in fact, the medieval writers, the medieval Christian writers that Lewis and Tolkien loved, they were interested in incorporating the pagan gods, kind of like subordinate beings, like angels, into their creative, imaginative mythology. And in doing so, there was no real tension between this and their commitment to a Christian worldview.
People might be interested in finding out more about the book or yourselves. Do you all have a web page that people can go to?
If you Google our names, you'll find all sorts of things.
Yeah, or if you look up, you can look us up on Amazon, that sort of thing.
We've been visiting with Carol and Philip Zaleski. They are the authors of The Fellowship, The Literary Lives of the Inklings. Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, DJ Orozco. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.